a good group. We're kind of like family because we've been together so long. We do very small jobs up to very large commercial jobs to custom building. Right now, our most asked for products are ceramic tiles, stone, and hardwood.
The San Jose Sharks get ready to open the National Hockey League playoffs on Thursday. This is a Sports Minute with Ira C. Smith. The Sharks have to travel to Anaheim to take on the Ducks on Thursday in the first in the best of seven-game series. The first games at the SAP Center in San Jose will be Monday, April 16th, and then second game on Wednesday, April the 18th. The other teams in the West that match up, Los Angeles takes on Vegas, Colorado against Nashville, and Minnesota against Winnipeg. It's the Golden State Warriors tuning up for the playoffs tonight. They're at Utah taking on the Jazz. 6 o'clock is airtime tonight for the broadcast, the Warriors and Jazz. The Oakland A's are down at L.A. taking on the Dodgers tonight, while the San Francisco Giants are home to the Diamondbacks, with Cueto pitching for the Giants, Corbin on the mound for the Diamondbacks. Tonight is the final tune-up before the playoffs get underway for the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are at Utah. 6 o'clock is airtime for the tip-off on KVON tonight. It's the Warriors and the Jazz tonight on KVON.
Here's a look at your Napa Valley news, courtesy of the Napa Valley Register. The state-run Veterans Home in Yountville had security shortcomings that the California Highway Patrol identified in 2010, according to a report obtained by the Sacramento Bee. The CHP found that the home had no security at its front gate, few security cameras. The Veterans Department asked that the Sacramento Bee not disclose the actual number of security cameras. Also in the report, inadequate fencing along the campus perimeter, spotty use of panic buttons and alarms in key buildings, and a small staff of 10 unarmed security officers patrolling the grounds with two officers on duty most of the time. CalVet spokeswoman June Ileana said in a written statement, "We implemented a number of recommendations from the Yountville report. Consistent with state law, we do not release the details of this security information." That's a look at your Napa Valley news. I'm Big Rick Stewart.
My name is Tom.
My name is Cindy.
We give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
We know our time and money are going to the right places.
We don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
I used to have a sweet tooth. Had it removed when I was a kid. So what do I crave instead of chocolate? A big red box from Grainger. Grainger satisfies my craving for great customer service with 24/7 support, effortless ordering, and same-day pickup or next-day delivery options. No busy signals, no cavities. I love Grainger. You know why? Because when it comes to reliable product and technical support, Grainger's got your back. Call or click Grainger.com to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For many years, the MPS Society has been helping children and their families cope with the rare disease of MPS that has some treatments but no cure by supporting research families and increasing public and professional awareness. You can help relieve the pain suffered by children with MPS by participating in the MPS Race for a Cure on Sunday, April 29th in Yountville, starting at 8:30 a.m. This will be a timed 5K run and 1 mile walk at the Veterans Home of California. All proceeds will benefit MPS research and family support programs. Visit mpssociety.org for more details and to register for the race. Join the MPS Race for the Cure this April 29th. Thank you to our nation-run sponsors, BioMarin Pharmaceuticals, Sanofi Genzyme, Sangamo Therapeutics, Shire, and Ultragenics Pharmaceuticals.
Get ready for another heap full of fascinating things to know from witty and intriguing people on Judd's Napa Valley Show. No stale script and no rehearsing, live from a Napa studio. You may be that intriguing person on Judd's Napa Valley Show. On Judd's Napa Valley Show. Judd's Napa, Judd's Napa, Judd's Napa Valley. Wait for it. Show.
Show.
And now, Live from the 1440 KVON studios at Broadcast Park in the beautiful Napa Valley, it's Judd's Napa Valley Show. I'm Lauren Mull, and here's your host, Judd Finkelstein.
Thank you very much, Lauren Mull. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, Judd, and man, does it feel good to have the theme song back live this week.
It sure does. We are joined live in studio by our musical director, Mr. Gordon Lustig. Good morning, Gordon.
I will not be speaking today, but my ukulele will be speaking.
It will be doing all the talking for you.
Yes.
Okay. It's lovely to have you back.
Thank you.
I would like to know if there's anything new with you. It's been a while since you've been sitting here with us.
I've been sitting here the whole time.
But you have been. We just haven't even
here. Yeah, you just don't even pay attention to me. I'm last week, you're sitting there all panicking over the theme song, and I'm going, I don't know why they just asked me. I'm 2 feet away.
You're right here. Don't pipe up, man. Let your ukulele talk. It's good to see you.
I went through a shy period.
Perfect for radio.
Yeah.
Lovely to see you, sir. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, I have a song for you later if there's time about Mississippi and stuff. So
yeah, absolutely. Know. We're heading on the Judd's Hill Mississippi cruise coming up, so that's very appropriate. Lauren, everything good with you? Got any big gigs coming up? Singing major league sporting events?
Oh, San Francisco Giants, July 5th, with Everybody is a Star. But we don't know yet who they'll be playing against.
I'm sure we could look that up in a moment, but I'm not going to take the time now because we've got a full show. But I do want you to let us know once again about Everybody's a Star.
Well, Everybody's a Star is a nonprofit-based organization in Sonoma that helps special needs individuals like myself showcase our talents in professionally made broadcast-quality music videos.
Indeed. Indeed they do. And there's a wonderful video of you, Mr. Lauren Mull, looking quite dashing in your white tuxedo dinner jacket. Singing, I Just Haven't Found You Yet.
You're so close.
I Just Want to Find You Now.
No.
We Haven't Found Each Other.
You're getting closer.
What is it?
Just Haven't Met You Yet.
Oh, it's close.
Michael Bublé.
Meet, find, whatever. But if folks want to see the video, that's the important thing. What is the website?
www.everybodystar.org.
Fantastic. All right. I'm just going to mention something very quickly.
Go ahead, Judd.
Thank you. I appreciate the permission. Springtime Bonanza at Judd's Hill. This is our annual popular event that supports the Napa Valley Youth Symphony. It's coming up on Sunday, May 20th, noon to 2:30 p.m. Judd's Hill Wine Club members, as always, free to come. Others, there's a small fee, but all the information there is at juddshill.com on the events page. Look it up. Always a great time. Food, wine, festivities. Good stuff.
Oh, good.
All right. We've got a packed show today, so I want to just cut the banter right now and get to it, shall we?
Sure, Judd.
All right.
He studied ancient cuisine that perhaps a goth smelled and has shot passionate chefs who at broth yelled. He's traversed planet Earth to make photos of great worth, but he's our guest here today, Stephen Rothfeld.
Stephen Rothfeld, how are you, sir? Welcome.
Very good, and I'm very honored to be in this very interesting group of people here.
It is quite an eclectic combination, isn't it?
Very much so.
Well, it's good to see you. We are really just meeting right now for the first time, although I have known of you for a bit. I was given this book that's right in front of me last year. It's called Israel Eats, and if you don't know if you noticed this, Lauren, right here it says who wrote this book. It's this guy, Stephen Rothfeld, right here. So I've had your book for some time, and I was very pleased to know that you are actually a member of our Napa Valley community. You live up in St. Helena. I had no idea. And this is cool. I'm not exactly sure where we should start. Perhaps here. How about this? May I introduce you via your own words?
Sure.
Okay. Because
may I have a preview first, though?
You can look. It's from you. It's on your website.
Okay.
If you go to StephenRothfeld.com and look about, you have this little blurb that you've written about yourself. May I?
Sure.
Do you mind?
Of course. No.
I think this is a good. I don't do this to all the guests, but I really liked the way this sounded.
Oh, thank you.
So this is you speaking about you. I am addicted to the rush I feel when I turn a corner and stumble upon the unexpected. Is it a cloud hovering above an unfamiliar landscape? The blue eyes of a stranger? A stack of blood-red pomegranates? The elegant swirl of wine in a glass? Or an outlandish dessert that hint at a mysterious otherworldliness that nourishes my hungry spirit? Ooh, that's poetic. It evokes images. It talks to your love of travel and capturing. And this kind of, that's your main gig, right? You travel the world and photograph, yes. And you have books of your photography from around the world.
Yes, yes. When I was young, I was 20 years old and I left school. I was a student at UC Berkeley and I was sick of reading about the world in all the novels that I was assigned. And so I decided that I had to see the world. So I went home and I announced to my parents that I was leaving school to travel. And my father, he hit the roof. He said, you'll never go back. You'll ruin your life. And my mother said, Jerry, let him go. So I took off. I had a one-way ticket and I traveled and I realized that that is what I had to do in my life. I had to spend my life in strange places out of my comfort zone. That's when I'm happiest.
That's interesting. I've been thinking about that exact, you know, philosophy. Do I want to get out of my comfort zone? I find that sometimes, as much as I desire to see the world, learn about the cultures, immerse myself, there's a part of me that's scared to do it. And I have traveled, thankfully. I've gotten out of the comfort zone, and we just got back from Mexico City. And there was a bit of that. You know, ooh, that's a weird-looking dish. Should I even eat that? It was ant eggs, escamoles, you know? Ooh. But I tried it, and I loved it. And, you know, people were wonderful and friendly, and it really gave me the confidence to want to do more. So where did you... Where were you? Where did you live? Where did you grow up? You went to UC Berkeley. Where did Jerry hit the roof?
Southern California.
Southern California.
Yes. So I grew up there. I was actually born in New York. Mm-hmm. We moved. It was the dream to go west in 1962. And we started our lives in Southern California. And then when I was...
Talking Los Angeles?
San Fernando Valley.
Okay. Yeah. In the valley.
And then I only applied to one school, which is UC Berkeley, because it was the only place I wanted to go. And I told my parents, if I don't get in, I'm not going to college.
Oh,
and
no kidding.
Luckily, I got in.
Okay,
and that sort of opened my mind and my world.
Were you there during the beginning of the free speech movement?
Or was at the end. I started college in 1974.
Oh, okay.
And I remember... shopping at a food shop called Ma Revolutions on Telegraph Avenue and walking in there and being able to buy produce, listening to Jackson Brown and Linda Ronstadt was like, I couldn't believe that this was actually happening.
That this was your life.
Yeah,
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But let's back up just a moment to the folks. You know, you said your dad hit the roof, never come back. What was their perspective? Where were they coming from? What did they do?
My father was actually in the clothing industry, and my mother was a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
I would come home from school, and she would be in the kitchen sewing, knitting, making dinner, and she was always there for me. You know, that was such a great feeling that if ever I had something important to share, I knew my mother was going to be home.
Wow.
So that was nice.
That's very comforting. Yes. Then the idea to... leave all of that, even to go up to Berkeley, which is far away from such a nurturing, you know, nest, as you have that adventure spirit.
There's something in me that I don't turn back. I never turn back and go backward. I always love to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to be in places where I don't know anyone. No one knows where I am. And it's even better if I don't speak the language.
That's better for you.
Yeah, I like it even more.
Wow. Okay, so you're all the things that make me a nervous traveler to you are saying this is what fuels me.
This is what just rocks me. And the best thing is if I don't know what I'm going to have for breakfast. If it's a totally different cuisine because I hate eating the same thing every day.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not the guy that gets a hotel that includes the breakfast buffet?
Never, never. Unless it's being paid for by my client.
Okay. That's good. What? Gosh, there's so many questions I have for you because you're very intriguing, and I love this philosophy that you have. So do you want to talk about, so you told me how you got on the path of being a traveler. Where did the camera, when did you decide, like, this is going to be my path in life, is to capture what I see?
Well, the same father who hit the roof when I told him I was going to leave to travel the world, he enlisted in the army in world during World War II when he was underage.
Oh.
His mother had just died and he just wanted to do something different, so his father signed the papers. So he, you know, he planted the seed in me of wanting adventure. And the interesting thing is that we were both in Europe at 20 years old, but he was there under obviously very different circumstances. But in all the years that he would talk about his war experiences, he would always talk about the funny things, about being on a farm with seven brothers and eating Camembert cheese and traveling with a frying pan. So he always had kind of adventurous stories, and he actually took photographs and he printed them himself. And so I have, I actually created an album for him of all his war photographs. So photography was always in our minds. He always had a camera. He always took pictures of us. He had the first Polaroid camera, which I still have.
Oh, wow.
And then my brother built a darkroom. My brother loves to say that he's the one that introduced me to photography. But okay. I was interested in photography, took a class in high school, and it just seemed like such an effortless thing for me to walk around with a camera. And so when I left Berkeley wanting to travel, I took the camera that I always had, which I tried to sell to someone in Turkey so I could buy a Turkish carpet, but the price differential didn't quite work out. But anyway, I always had a camera with me, and on that trip, I decided I need to have a life where I can take pictures and travel. And I, you know, at 20 years old, I was pretty fortunate to kind of zero in on what it was that I wanted to do.
And be able to actually make a living, like turn it into your life path. That's incredible. And you've been moving forward ever since. Did you return to Berkeley?
We actually do our marketing every Saturday in Berkeley.
As far as a student, or did you
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I went back and finished my degree in comparative literature.
Oh.
And then I applied to an art school in LA that I had actually gone to visit when I was a student at Berkeley, called Art Center College of Design. And it is a fantastic, fantastic commercial art school. And I actually just went back there and visited them after never setting foot on that campus for 34 years. And it was a very, very incredible experience to go back there, because it sort of was the time when I was able to sort of develop what I wanted to do in photographically. So that was very exciting for me.
Oh, that's got to be an amazing experience.
Yeah.
And what continues to compel you to get out there? I mean, you've been doing it for a long time. I know a lot of folks, they kind of get to a point, I'm like, okay, I have now done that. Here's the next chapter. But you keep going. What do you get out of, obviously your soul is stirred at some level.
It's,
and what is it you yourself are getting out of the travel? And
I love to be in different places and see how people approach this life that we've all of us have been given, and figure it out in a different way. That is really what I love, to see how people find happiness in situations that are so different than mine.
That's got to be very uplifting.
It's fantastic.
And that's what you are, I would imagine, are hoping to capture through your photography as well.
Well, you know, I think that the kind of work that I do, I feel that it's sort of visual anthropology, because I kind of want to sort of observe and study just the reality of my subject, of a person. I want you to be able to look at one of my photographs and get a feeling for being there. If I've achieved that, I feel that, you know, maybe I've had some kind of success.
You want to talk about some of the places you've visited that have particularly affected you? Or,
well, I just took my family on a trip to Vietnam, and I've been exploring Southeast Asia. I've been to most of the countries there, and there is such a beauty in the people that I love, and of course the food is incredible, and it's different. And I felt about Vietnam, I felt really uncomfortable about going there, being an American, and what the conflict was that our country was involved with. And so I really wanted to get into that discomfort of feeling that. And of course, my family was not too happy about it because they love a beach vacation in Mexico.
They're probably not looking for the discomfort factor.
No,
right?
No. But they loved it. They were very, very moved by the experience.
Oh, it's got to be, it has to be life-changing on some level.
Always, always.
And how do you, since you say you like to go places where you don't speak the language, what is your form of communication? You've got to get through the day somehow.
Food.
Okay.
Food is one.
And how does
but
that work?
But I actually do speak French. Mm-hmm. I studied French in college, and I work a lot in France, and my wife and I lived in France. So my French is very good, and I've found that in Africa, in Turkey, in where else was I that I was speaking French? A lot of places. If you can speak French or English, I think you can communicate, I think, almost anywhere.
You can get around.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was in France for the very first time a couple years ago through one of our wine club trips, and I don't speak French. And I did a couple weeks probably leading up on Duolingo, you know, on the computer, trying to learn a few phrases here and there. And the very first spot that we popped our heads into was this gorgeous bakery. It was in Bordeaux, was where we were. And the woman there spoke no English. I spoke no French. We're, you know, I could have pointed to some things and would have all worked out. And for some reason, I said to my wife something like, I said, which one do you want? But I said it in Spanish. And I'm not sure why I did it, just because I like speaking Spanish. And the woman behind the counter, you know, looked at me and said, oh, ¿hablas español? I said, sí. And then we were able to carry on in Spanish. So, I mean, I see the value, absolutely, in, you know, learning another language, being able to speak at least another language. But I'm so fascinated by just your previous statement about liking to be somewhere where you don't.
Yeah.
And what is it you get out of that? The nonverbal communication.
Right. Because then you have to communicate using other sensibilities, other sensitivities, and you have to really be succinct in either your actions or your expressions to really deliver your message. And it kind of distills the interaction in a really, I think, interesting way.
Yeah. For somebody that has a degree in literature to kind of words, as I find very interesting. However, you have written books. You have many books.
Actually, this book is the first book I wrote. I went to Israel for the first time in, I think, 2011.
Okay.
I had a friend, an Israeli friend from Art Center, who would taunt me and tell me that I was a terrible Jew because I'd never been to Israel. And the fact is, I never had an interest.
Laying the guilt on, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, no. I never had an interest in going. So I had 2 weeks in between jobs in Italy. I was waiting for an olive harvest. So I said, I'm going to go and visit my friend Dorit in Israel. And I went, and I was just floored. I was floored by the whole experience.
Yeah, apparently so. And I'm holding up this book, and it is... it's hefty. I mean, this could be a coffee table book as well, but it's a wonderful cookbook. It's filled with stories, info, your beautiful photographs. The name of the book is Israel Eats. I'm holding it up for the audience to see. Israel Eats, with an introduction by famed chef Nancy Silverton,
yes,
which is very cool. And I love that you talk about the people and you show the people that you've met along the way, and you get their stories, how they're involved in the food of Israel. And it really helps make a connection. And I was given this book as a gift. So, I mean, I'd love for you to autograph it before we go. You can sign under the inscription of the person who gave it to me. So it'll be doubly autographed.
Oh, nice.
You can see there's already an inscription there. And I've made some things out of here. And it just absolutely delicious and interesting. And some of the spicings may be hard to find at
our
local...
Actually, no, you can find all of them. Za'atar, sumac, everything.
Well, I was going to say, you can go down to... if you're at Safeway, maybe not so much. Maybe a few, maybe, but nothing against Safeway, gang. But right here at Oxbow, they have the
spice company. He's Israeli.
Yeah,
the guy who owns it is Israeli, yeah.
They've got everything I've ever looked in any recipe and said, I don't even know what that is. I walk in and they've got a jar of it.
Right at the Oxbow.
And that's fun. So what... what made you want to write a book? I mean, you've been a photographer, and then all of a sudden, boom, let's write an actual book that includes my photographs but has narrative and has recipes. And
well,
what was the inspiration?
What happened is I went and I came back and tried to pitch the idea of this book to the publishers I work with. And this was before the Ottolenghi books really hit. Yotam Ottolenghi, he is the Israeli London-based chef, and his books have done phenomenally well.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes. I think my mom has one of these.
I'm sure everyone has one of his books.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, before his books hit the U.S., I came back with this idea to do this book on Israel, and my publishers, and I have to say even my Jewish publishers, were not even interested in investing in a book about Israel because they thought, what, you know, with the terrorism, no one goes to Israel, no one cares, no one wants to see this side of Israel. And that made me even more motivated to get it done because I felt people, when they think of Israel, they think of people dodging bombs in the streets. They think of terrorism. They don't think of this incredible, incredible joie de vivre and love of food.
Yeah.
And what's so particularly interesting about this cuisine in Israel is that there are so many different influences happening there. And so it's a very lively cuisine, very fresh. You know, the Israelis were so industrious and they irrigated the desert and they grow the most amazing tomatoes, eggplants. They have just great food products.
Yeah.
So as I got deeper into the project, I decided I had to write it because I had to tell the stories of these people that I was meeting, because I would meet someone and even before we would even discuss what I was going to photograph, what they were going to make me, we talked for 3 hours about where they were from, where their parents were from. And it was just, it was such an incredible experience. So I decided that I had to tell it first person.
It's great. And to me, it certainly sums up why travel is so important, because you go into a place that maybe you've heard about on the news for some very negative things. But when you actually get there and you meet people, like, wow, these are people, and we can relate, and we can tell each other stories about each other, and we can be family, and we can break bread together.
Yeah.
That's particularly what I enjoy about traveling, is really getting to know people beyond what you hear about, beyond any stereotypes, and getting to actually know. And this book, I think, does a great job of that. I congratulate you on
that.
Thank
you.
I'm glad it's out there. Any particular... was there anyone that you met that really sparked the idea? Perhaps a chef, a meal you had, a type of food where you said, oh my gosh, this is just amazing. Somebody should be spotlighting this. Was there a moment?
Well, one of the many moments happened maybe the second day I was there. And I walked by this restaurant. It was about 4 p.m. And the place was packed. People were singing. The food looked amazing. So I walked in and I said, I'm hungry. Can I eat? And they said, sorry, we're full. I saw a stool at the bar, and the stool was half inside and half outside the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, can I sit there? And so she said, I'll have to ask the chef, because if you sit at the bar, you have to eat what the chef cooks.
Mm-hmm.
So she walked over to him, and I saw her talking to him, and he kind of stared at me, and he kind of clicked his head up, and so I was in. So I sat down. The people next to me filled my glass with wine, and I had a three-hour, I didn't even know what it was. Was it lunch? Was it pre-dinner?
Mm-hmm.
But I had a three-hour meal with these people who were so interesting that we are still friends, and they come and visit Napa Valley, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
And they're very, very important, incredible Israelis. And they actually took me to meet the president of Israel on my last
goodness.
Trip, because he gives my book as the gift of state when they travel out of the country, or when people come to visit Israel, they give that book.
Wow.
So that was really, I mean, so that meal, it was a restaurant called Machne Yehuda, and it is in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And there is they have a style and a cuisine there that you just, you've never seen before. So if anybody is going to Israel, make sure you book in advance, because it's very hard to get a table. But go there, because you will be really infected by this feeling of Israeli life and cuisine at that particular place.
Wonderful. We are going to have to take a break. We've got Stephen Rothfeld, who's adventurer, world traveler, photographer, author of the book we were just talking about, Israel Eats. Look it up. But we're going to talk more. We're going to talk about how you're a TV star now and how folks here in Napa Valley can have a chance to see what you're up to at our beloved Cameo Cinema in St. Helena coming up.
You're listening to Judd's Napa Valley Show. We'll be right back after these messages.
Are you tired of looking at that car in your garage you know you'll never drive again? Is the RV or boat just taking up space in your yard? Why not put it to good use? Donate it to the Polyclass Foundation. Hi, it's Rainey Howe. The Polyclass Foundation is considered one of America's best charities. When you donate a vehicle to us, you can be confident the proceeds are going to a great cause. Our mission every day of the year is to keep kids safe and bring missing children home. The Polyclass Foundation makes donating easy. Give us a call. We'll come out and pick up your vehicle, handle all the paperwork, and you'll receive the maximum tax benefit. Help us keep kids safe and bring missing children home. Call the Polyclass Foundation today at 769-1334. That's 769-1334. Or go online to polyclass.org. Thanks for your support.
If your tires go flat when you even look at a rock, that's a big oh no. Thankfully, for all your car's big oh no's, there's always a big oh yes. Now through April 22nd at Big O Tires, buy three tires and get one free on select sets of four tires with installation purchase. Big O Tires. Installation charges extra. Required on all four tires. Up to 10% shop fee based on non-discounted retail price not to exceed $35. Disposal fees extra where permitted. Eligibility may vary. At participating locations, not valid with other offers.
At 1440 on your AM dial in Northern California and streaming live in Jerusalem at KVON.com, back to Judd's Napa Valley Show.
That's right. The Holy Land gets this show. And very appropriately so, our guest is Stephen Rothfeld. He's an amazing globetrotting photographer and the author of a book called Israel Eats. In a moment, we're going to talk about your TV stardom, which is pretty cool and amazing. But there's something that you brought in that's just staring me down. We need to mention this right now. You've put this on our counter here. I don't know what's going on, but this looks like a very furry, very pink hat.
Well, my son, who actually was a student of Gordon Lustig, who is sitting right next to me.
Oh, the guitar?
Yes,
guitar student.
Yes. Huh. At some point in his youth, he decided that he wanted to be a pimp for Halloween.
Oh,
so
dear.
He wanted a pink pimp hat. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
much for Family Value Show, huh?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right.
Sorry,
well,
folks.
I walked out of the house with this hat, and my daughter, who is actually studying to be a lawyer, she screamed at me, "How can you walk out of the house with that hat?"
Meaning, but how could you give it away?
Yes,
it's a family heirloom.
No, I mean, how could you be so insensitive and bring a hat like that out in the world? But I just thought, you know, it had to leave our house because we are definite supporters of the Me Too movement and everything going on in the world right now. So, and my wife and I have also been trying to become more minimalist and
Understood. Do
a death cleaning before we die.
Oh, jeez. So, come on.
So I thought we need to pass this on, and this could be used at hopefully one of the Me Too marches as a—
Yeah, you know, it doesn't— I'm looking— Well, go ahead. Finish your statement.
So anyway,
As a
variation of the pink hats that marchers are wearing.
And I'm looking at it. It doesn't scream costume pimp hat. It just looks like a pink, feathery, furry hat. You know, a girl could use it as a dress-up for even like a Easter or springtime type. Gordon is modeling right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so if a feathery pink hat sounds good to you, listener, be the first one to tweet. We still haven't come up with a good name for this bit after our esteemed district attorney suggested we change the name from Getting Your Hands on Judd's Goodies, which I agree with.
And Chief Potter as well.
And Police Chief Potter as well suggested we change the name. So we'll change the name. It's no longer called Getting Your Hands on Judd's Goodies. But in the meantime, if you would like this hat, be the first to tweet with the hashtag JNVS for Judd's Napa Valley Show. And then please put at Judd's Hill, tag the winery. That way it'll pop up immediately. If you're the first one, I'll bring this over to our tasting room at the south end of Silverado Trail, and it will be there until Friday. After Friday, we'll just donate it to some worthy cause if no one picks it up.
It's in perfect condition.
It's phenomenal.
It's in mint condition.
It's gorgeous, actually.
Yeah, it is.
I'm coveting it. We have Gordon Lustig, our musical director, sitting here. And Gordon, you said you had a little snippet of a song you wanted to perform, maybe in commemoration of our river cruise coming up?
Yeah, your river cruise. So I rediscovered one of my favorite songwriters of all time.
Yeah.
Johnny Hartford.
Oh.
John Hartford. You know John Hartford? John Hartford, famous for, "It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. Gentle on My Mind."
But yeah.
He's written, he must have written a song for every thought he ever had. He just turned it into a quirky little song. And this is one that recently was played on Live From Here with Chris Thiele. You know, that's the new Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, right. Yes, yes.
Garrison Keillor's place. And he has amazing musicians on. And a guy named Chris Eldridge came on and played that along with the band. And he described this as probably perhaps the happiest song ever written.
Okay.
I'll just give you a little
we love
taste of it. Okay. "You could take me back to a little old home I love and people that taught in the Mississippi Valley. Even on a Sunday morning, you know that I'll be there. And we all come back for to be with you, good neighbor. Live a good life in the Mississippi Valley. Down on the river, you know that's where I want to be. And the night comes on like a blanket, chilly winds. People come out in the Mississippi Valley, Western Kentucky, Cairo, over in South St. Louis. There's a baseball game at the Legion Post on Tuesday. Have a good ride on the Julia Bell Swain, go down to the river, you know that's where I wanna be. And the fields of corn and the banjo music, catfish fry and a towboat payload, pushing upstream against the stars. And letter comes back from a girl in Calhoun County, here in the middle of the Mississippi River. I'm in love and you know that's where I wanna be." If you wanna hear more of it, I'll be playing that with my new friend Graham Terry. There's a big article on him in Napa Magazine. We're going to be playing at Silverado. There's a big fundraiser for Girls on the Run on April 22nd. It'll be all day. It's a free thing at Silverado Resort and Spa outside.
Fantastic.
And so,
thank you, Gordon.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm going to find a recording of that and bring it with me down to the Mississippi.
Yeah, I'll send you
a
few different versions of it. Sure.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
And now back to our guest, Mr. Stephen Rothfeld. Let's talk about, and feel free to pipe in, Gordon. I mean, you're here. You're part of the show. So it seems like you're scribbling down some notes or something. So I don't know if you have an exam coming up.
I'm just bored.
You're bored. I have that effect on folks
thanks,
sometimes.
Thanks, Gordon. Thanks.
I'm taking the blame.
I sat so many days in your house listening to my son practice guitar, and I was never bored.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were just as bored. I'm just kidding. I'm not
never.
Bored. I'm working very hard. I'm listening. This is actually...
I might just let the two of you go from here. We got about another 20 minutes.
Oh, right.
The two of you just...
Yeah, go for it. It's very interesting.
No, I like
and
this.
I
this banter is better than...
I haven't been to Israel either. I feel bad. I've been offered... And I have a friend named Dorit in Israel, too.
Maybe it's the same Dorit.
It's a small country.
I think
it
there's
might
only
be.
One Dorit in Israel.
Probably. She's in India now, though.
Ah, okay. Not the same one.
Different. Okay. Okay. So you have... you have this book out, Israel Eats, and this is just a funny thing. This is how we kind of got to meet each other via email. My daughter and I sat down to watch, we'd been to Mexico City. So before we went to Mexico City, I heard you got to see the episode of this Netflix series called Somebody Feed Phil. It features Phil Rosenthal, who is the writer, producer, creator of Everybody Loves Raymond and all sorts of other comedy greatness. And he has an eating show. He goes around the world eating. So I saw he has a Mexico City episode, and we watched it, and my kids loved it. And they said, "Oh, we want to try, you know, cow udder tacos," even though Phil didn't seem to enjoy that, but they were intrigued by this. They loved the show. They wanted to see another episode. We watched the Tel Aviv episode. And on this episode, at one segment, Phil sits down with none other than you.
Mm-hmm.
You. You're right there.
Yes.
You're there. Stephen Rothfeld. And we enjoy the episode. It's fun to see you guys talking about Israel and Israeli cuisine. And within hours, I receive an email from a man I've never met before, Stephen Rothfeld. This guy right here saying, hey, I was just on this show. I live in St. Helena, but I was on this show, Somebody Feed Phil, talking about Israeli cuisine, and we're bringing the show to St. Helena. I heard I should reach out. Maybe we could do something. And I was just amazed. Like, just hours later, the universe, you know, brought us all together. So that was very, very cool. I was excited to hear from you, excited to know that you're bringing it to St. Helena. So let's talk about how you got on the show Somebody Feed Phil and what's happening in St. Helena.
So my friend Nancy Silverton, who is one of the most incredible food tasters I've ever met in my life, I worked with her on three of her books, Breads from La Brea Bakery, Pastries from La Brea Bakery, and the Campanile Cookbook. And she came with me to Israel on one of my trips. I asked her if she would write the introduction, and she agreed to come, and she created about a dozen recipes inspired by our journey. She has known Phil for a long time, and she gave him my book when he told her that he was going to do an episode on Israel. And so his producers called me and said, would you be interested in being on the show? And I was actually going to be in Israel at that time because I was taking a very interesting group of Napa Valley vintners and art collectors on a visit to Israel. Oh. So it worked out very well. I was able to be on the show. And so I took Phil to a vegan restaurant that I really love this place.
His reaction was quite something. He didn't expect to enjoy it as much, to enjoy vegan cuisine as much as he did.
He really, really was surprised at the diversity and also the incredible flavors of this food.
Well, when you talk about that, so much wonderful food is grown and sourced right there in Israel. You know, everything is fresh from the produce to the, well, wouldn't have dairy at a vegan restaurant, but well, no, there's a lot of wonderful farms there.
Absolutely.
Are you vegan?
I'm a non-meat eater. Okay. I have not been a meat eater pretty much my entire life.
I see.
And sometimes it could be a bit of a challenge when I work a lot in France as well, mm-hmm. and I've worked with all the great chefs. And I actually did a book with Joël Robuchon, the great French chef. And we were at a lunch in a region called the Auvergne, which is a very meat-driven region. And we were visiting his butcher of veal. And whenever Joël would show up, they would roll out a feast like something you've never seen in your life. And I was sitting next to the butcher, and when they served the veal dish and I said, I don't eat it, I'm a non-meat eater, he literally choked.
Oh my goodness.
In the conversation.
You had to apply the Heimlich right there.
And then the other funny story about Joel was that when I would go to dinner at his restaurant, Jaman, and this was an incredible restaurant, mm-hmm. they had about 40 people in the kitchen for 37 diners, and it was it took 6 months to get a reservation. I mean, it was like crazy. And anyway, he would cook for me. And one day we were at a dinner in the restaurant, and they come with the plates, with the cloches on the plates, and then all the chefs, all the servers remove them at the same time.
Right.
And on my plate was a huge raw pig's ear.
A raw pig's ear.
Raw pig's ear on my plate. And it created a sensation in the dining room. Everyone wanted a taste. Just kidding.
The stunned silence.
That was a joke.
I am absolutely
It was a joke. It was a joke.
Stunned. I didn't know what to think because that could very well be.
You know, Judd, I feel like I've really surprised you twice so far.
This is fun for me.
Pink hat.
Love it.
Pig's ear.
Why not? Somehow there's a connection.
Yeah.
I was curious how you found yourselves in a vegan restaurant in Tel Aviv, the restaurant?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Is this a place you had been before? You
knew
them?
Yes, I've been there many times, mm-hmm. and I met the owner, Harel Zakim. He's actually, his family is Iranian, and I went into the place and loved it, loved the food. They have a huge display of vegetables inside the restaurant. Mm. And, you know, the restaurants in Tel Aviv are very welcoming and full of life. And the food was so incredible. So when I went and met with him, of course, we sat and talked for 3 hours before we even began began our work. And I just, I loved everything that he was doing, and I loved everything I tasted. So Phil really, really enjoyed it. He was intrigued by the idea of a vegan restaurant.
It wasn't a hard sell to the producers of the segment?
No. It was either taking them to a goat cheese farm, mm-hmm. where these very, very earthy, unusual people make exquisite cheese and cook you lunch, and it's a fantastic experience. But they opted for the Tel Aviv vegan place.
It's a great segment. And now all of Napa Valley has a chance to see it, even if you don't have Netflix, because you're bringing it and Phil to the Cameo Cinema.
Yes. We have an event at the Cameo Cinema, which is on Thursday. I do believe it's sold out.
Oh.
And we are also doing something at the Oshman Family Center in Palo Alto, and that's on Wednesday. And
of next...
Yes, Wednesday the 18th, I believe.
Okay.
And we are having chefs prepare recipes from the book, and I don't know what wines they're serving in at the Cameo Theater, but in the event at the Oshman Center, I'm working with an Israeli wine importer, and we have wines from Kishur, which is a winery, and all the wines are made by people with special needs. So it's a very interesting winery, and so we're doing a tasting, I believe, of 2 or 4 different wines at the Oshman Center.
And that's in Palo Alto.
Palo Alto,
and
yes.
And then the next night is St. Helena?
Right. Wednesday is Palo Alto, which is the 18th, and then the Cameo is the 19th.
And you think it may be sold out at the Cameo.
I
would imagine.
So.
That sounds like a wonderful evening. But if folks wanted to find out, is it linked through your website or
probably
the Cameo,
Theater? Yes, the Cameo Theater.
Cameo Cinema in St. Helena. We love it. We've had Kathy Buck, the owner, on this show. What a cool lady.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your hometown. How did you find yourself in Napa Valley?
I was working on a book called Savoring the Wine Country, and this was in 1994. My son had just been born, and we were living in L.A. We just had a big earthquake. My wife was pregnant, had to fit herself under a marble table, and we just we don't want to be in L.A. anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came here to Napa Valley to start this book, and I realized that people were living here and they were all unified by the love of the place where they lived. And in LA, people are there because they have to be. I mean, LA's cool. It's become cooler over the years. But I just felt like this is a place similar to the places that I love to visit and work in Italy and France, where it's a rural experience. You're close to a city, but everyone has this unified feeling about the love of where they live. So we just picked up and moved very, very dramatically. And it was a good choice for us.
I'm glad to hear that. No, it's no arguing. It's a lovely place to be. And certainly close enough to major airports. You can get all over the world.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. This has been fun. It's me. I'm going to take full responsibility for this. We've been getting to know you. I had not yet met you before you walked in the door, and I'm very happy to have met you now. I hope to remain friends, but after this next question, that'll be up to you. So I'm going to ask you something that I know our listeners are interested in, and it's totally your call whether you want to answer it. If you do, please answer honestly and straightforwardly. No need for some people can get a little dramatic, but I have a sense you will. Maybe you have a way with words. You'll be able to, if you need to dance around it, but I hope not. You'll just be straightforward. So, Stephen Rothfeld is you've seen it all. You've been around the world. How many countries do you think? Dozens and dozens.
Over under 50.
Okay, well, that's still
over 40, under 50.
Oh, that's a lot of countries to have visited.
Not enough.
And experienced. Not enough. So I know you've seen it all. You've experienced much. And I just want to know, do you go nuts for donuts?
Actually, no. I don't eat donuts.
You don't eat donuts?
No. Then I only eat chocolate.
Okay, well, there's some chocolate on one of these donuts. Well, that's the answer. We don't have to go any further. We have a nice selection of our own Napa donuts here. But
I will try one out
in the
of,
spirit. Will you hand that over there, Lauren? The tape is very
But if you give me a donut, I'm going to need a cappuccino.
Aha. We can maybe arrange that somehow soon. Hold on to the donut. We'll get you a cappuccino after the show. So there's an array of donuts. We will not go any further with the donuts. Sometimes
Why?
I have some ridiculous follow-up questions about, okay, well, let's have a look
at them.
Since you are an artist and a photographer, okay, tell me what you see in this box of donuts.
Well, actually, I see a donut that would be the perfect accompaniment for the pink hat.
Yes. Would you like to describe in your words?
The donut is, of course, the traditional donut shape, but it is smeared with a very beautiful, I would say, fuchsia pink frosting, and then sprinkled on top are monochromatic pink sprinkles, which means that they blend in with the pink smear, and yellow and white. And I'm holding it in my hand, and my fingers are sort of merging into this donut. It's like it's so soft, and there's a nice kind of greasiness that's covering my fingers that I really,
Lauren, give me a tissue,
really like. No, it's okay.
Okay,
it's
okay.
So I see that one, and then I see a chocolate one, and I see something that looks super ugly, but probably so good.
I don't know what they call it. I call it the nub.
Yeah, it looks
it's a glazed
actually,
nub.
It looks incredible.
Well, you are
it
welcome to.
Good. And then there's something else, and this looks probably, I don't know. This looks equally. These look. If I were a donut lover, I would probably be eating these right now.
Okay, you do not have to eat them, but I loved hearing your description. Thank you for answering honestly
and
openly.
And they come
and
with a nice paper, crinkling paper. See, yeah, wrapped in paper.
You hear that? And now it's time to play everyone's favorite party game here on Judd's Napa Valley Show.
This is Mad Libs.
That's right. It's the fill in the blank word game that I'm sure you're familiar with. Mad Libs, are you not, Stephen?
We love playing this game.
Okay, great. So you know what to do. So let's just get to it, shall we?
Okay.
I would like you to give me a noun.
Dogwood tree.
Dogwood tree. Okay. Dogwood tree. How about an adjective?
Dilapidated.
Dilapidated. All right. Another adjective?
Eerie.
Eerie. Okay. Kind of creepy, eerie. A plural noun? More than one thing?
You know, in the springtime, my back itches a lot, so I'm going to say back scratchers.
Okay. I'm starting to feel a little bit of the seasonal allergies as well. Back scratcher. Z. All right. A noun, singular.
Since I'm not wearing it, I'll say wedding ring.
Wedding ring. Okay. An adjective?
Melancholy.
Melancholy. Oh, no. Sorry that came so quickly to you to say that out loud. Okay. Is this the state of this show? I'm sorry.
No.
How about a plural noun?
Truffles.
Ooh, yum. Okay, I like that. We're back on track. A singular noun?
Pink hat.
Pink hat. We know that. An adjective?
Steamy.
Ooh. Can't wait to see where this is going. And finally, another adjective.
Overripe.
Overripe. Okay. here's what happened. Stephen Rothfeld, earlier today, I was on your website, stephenrothfeld.com, and I copied down, actually, the blurb that you wrote about yourself that we read at the top of the show, but you have now just rewritten it via this Mad Libs game. Are you ready?
I have to be.
Think right? You can handle this? Yeah. Okay. Here we go. This is you now speaking about you in Mad Lib form. I'm addicted to the rush I feel when I turn a corner and stumble upon the unexpected. Hey, you know, there we go.
Right.
Is it a dogwood tree hovering above a dilapidated landscape? The eerie back scratchers of a wedding ring? That is just so bizarre. I don't even know what to make of that image. A stack of melancholy truffles. You might have come across in Italy some melancholy truffles, yeah? Is it the elegant swirl of wine in a pink hat that I like, especially looking at this hat in front of me? Ooh, or a steamy dessert. That kind of sounds good, actually. Yeah. A nice warm something. This almost makes too much sense. You're making me hungry. You're making me laugh. Or a steamy dessert that hint at a mysterious otherworldliness that nourishes my overripe spirit. That's pretty good. Gordon, what do you think about, do you have something here? Should we stretch and save it for podcast content, or are you ready to fly?
I could give you, you know, a work in progress.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of my favorite moments of Judd's Napa Valley Show. It doesn't happen all that often, but when it does, pure magic. This is when Gordon Lustig sits in and writes a song about the show that we just did.
And I have an epiphany.
What is that?
I had an epiphany sitting here, because I didn't do so well in high school and stuff. I just couldn't pay attention. But if I had to write a song for every subject that I was in, if they said, after the class today, you need to write a song about what you learned, I would have got all A's. So I was not bored. I was joking. And my joke went over about as well as your joke did. So I think we're...
I was just stunned. I didn't know what to think. My apologies. But okay, Gordon.
So I was taking notes about you. It was very interesting. And here's all I could come up with. It's hard to work on the song when I was really listening to what you're saying. Anyway. When he thinks back on his young days attending Berkeley, the only college where he wanted to be. Let's see, where's it go? And with an art and literature education, he knew he had a lot of world to see. Stephen Rothfeld could give you the bright colors. Love of life like his mother. His photos are like no others. You'll feel like you're right there. He always takes his camera when nobody speaks his language. Does that cause anxiety? Oh, no, contraire. Or I think it's just au contraire, right? Au contraire. Okay, so that
we
was
we don't
just
speak that language. Yeah.
No, I don't speak that language. So anyway, you know, a little Paul Simon. You know.
Very nice, man.
I loved it.
Gordon Lustig.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Can I own the rights to that?
Sure.
Okay.
You heard it.
There it is. Of course, it's all legal.
Right there.
Stephen Rothfeld, really a pleasure to meet you in person, having known your book, Israel Eats, for some time, and knowing about your photographic adventures around the world. It's really a pleasure to sit down and get to know you a little better. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I would come back whenever you have to fill some time.
Let's talk, because that may happen sooner rather
than
later.
Oh, good. I thought that was my job.
Well, Gordon and I could do it together. All right.
Judd, have a wonderful cruise next week. This is Lauren Mole speaking for Judd's Napa Valley Show, a Gillamar production.
I'm Dane Lobb. I'm a public safety specialist with PG&E. If you're in your home or business and you smell gas, your first step is to get out. Travel to a safe distance until you can't smell the gas anymore, and then call 911. The first responders will come out and they'll make it safe for you and your community.
Hola, mi valle. This is Isela
and Gabriela,
your new host for La Hora with Isela
y Gabriela.
Tune in to 1440 AM KVON
or stream KVON.com on Thursday morning at 9 a.m.